We're continuing in the 18th chapter of 2 Samuel, and we just gotten down into this 18th verse at our last lesson. We're in the story of King David. And at this point of our study, David has just been deposed from his throne by his son Absalom, who has usurped the throne, who has claimed that he's now king, and he has most of Israel following after him. And so David's been forced to leave the city of Jerusalem and go over into the land beyond Jordan in a retreat. And then Absalom has come after him with an army, and Absalom has now been defeated and killed. And in this 18th verse, we read about the fact that Absalom had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. I'd like to pause here just for a moment, since we have a mention of the king's dale, and let's talk about some of the events that happened here. This place called the king's dale in this 18th verse of 2 Samuel 18 is actually the valley of Kidron. This is the valley that our Savior passed over right after his keeping of the Passover, in which he instituted the Lord's Supper. And this is the valley that King David also passed over as he fled from the city of Jerusalem. Remember that David, in the 15th chapter of 2 Samuel, when he had to leave the city after Absalom had declared himself to be king and he was coming to make a showdown with David, he crossed this Kidron Valley. It's called the Brook Kidron in some places. And this is the valley that separates the city of Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives. And then David went on, after he crossed this valley, up to the Mount of Olives, and there he wept very bitterly. He had his head covered and his feet bare, and he was in a very deep state of mourning and depression because of what was happening to the kingdom and to him as king. Well, we'd like to point out the fact that this same mountain, this Mount of Olives, was very prominent in the life of our Savior. And all Bible students are very aware of the Mount of Olives because of the role that it played in the ministry of our Savior Jesus Christ. This Mount of Olives was about a Sabbath day's journey from Jerusalem, which is somewhere in the vicinity of 3/4 of a mile. And of course you had to pass across this Kidron Valley, or this Brook Cedron, so it says in John 18:1. And as we learn here, then, it's also called the King's Dale because there is the monument that Absalom had placed to himself. But the Mount of Olives was a fairly prominent feature. It had four peaks on it, and these four peaks had each one of them a different name. One was called the Peak of the Prophets because there were some prophets' graves located on the side of it. Another was called the Peak of Offenses because there were some idolatrous practices carried out on it. One was called the Peak of Galilee, and the other the Peak of the Ascension. And it was because on this peak that our Savior ascended after his resurrection. Now, in the life of Christ, let us notice some of the events that occurred on and around Mount Olivet as he conducted his ministry. It was from the side of this mountain, as he descended, that he began his triumphal entry into the city of Jerusalem. It was while standing upon the side of this mountain and viewing the city of Jerusalem and the temple that he prophesied about the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. It was to this mountain that he went after the Passover. And we have several chapters in the book of John in which Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he is talking to them after the Passover supper while on the way to Mount Olivet. It was on the side of this mountain that he went to a place called the Garden of Gethsemane, and there he prayed so fervently and so solemnly to God that this cup might be lifted from him. And it also was from one of the peaks of this mountain that he ascended into heaven whenever he left this earth for the last time in the physical form. So we see that this mountain figures very prominently then in the life of our Savior, and it's one with which all Bible students are pleased to have an acquaintance. And I wanted to mention it here because it has been mentioned a couple of times in the story of David, and now I have in this 18th verse the mention of this pillar that Absalom had raised up, and it was placed in the king's dale. So we have the death of Absalom. This was a thing David did not want to happen. He wanted Absalom to be spared at all costs, but Absalom was not spared. He was thrust through his heart. He was slain by the 10 young men that compassed about him. They smote him, and then he was buried in a great pit and covered with a very great heap of stones. So a very unglorious end for the man Absalom. And at this point, David has not yet learned about the outcome of the battle. So beginning with verse 19, we're going to have the story of David's learning about the outcome of this battle between his soldiers and the soldiers of Absalom. Remember, this war was actually a civil war. These were Israelites fighting against Israelites. So everyone that was killed on either side of the battle was simply a fellow Israelite having something bad happen to him. So now in verse 19, "Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, let me run and bear the king tidings how that the Lord hath avenged him of his enemies." Ahimaaz wants to be the one to go and tell the king about the victory. He wants to tell the king that his enemies have now been defeated, that the Lord has avenged him of his enemies, and so he is free to reclaim the throne and the crown. "And Joab said unto him, thou shalt bear no tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. But this day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead." Now, Ahimaaz was one of the official messenger bearers that David wanted to bring him messages, of course. This was back, though, when they were slipping messages out of Jerusalem as a result of what the spies of David had learned. But now that the war is over, now that David's side is victorious, Joab does not want Ahimaaz to be the one to bear the news, because Ahimaaz does not know the whole story. All he knows is that David's army has been victorious, and he's not really aware of the fact that the king's son is dead. He's not aware of the fact that Absalom is dead. And so Joab wants another to be able to bear this news to David, another who has a personal knowledge of what has happened and maybe can be more authoritative in giving David this report. So in verse 21, "Then said Joab to Cushai, go tell the king what thou hast seen." So he selects a man here named Cushai, and this word Cushai indicates that he comes from the area of Ethiopia, and some even think that this was a black man that had been a proselyte to the Israelite religion, and he now was selected by Joab to go and give David the news about the battle and about the death of Absalom. And he tells him to go tell what thou hast seen, which means that Cushai is going to be an eyewitness, and some think that he was one of those 10 that surrounded Absalom at the command of Joab and then slew him with the sword. And Cushai bowed himself unto Joab and ran. Now, the running here is being done from the point of the victory, which is somewhere in those that wooded area over in the land of Gad, and back to the city of Mahanaim, which is now David's temporary headquarters during this very trying time and crisis of the nation. So he ran. He started toward the city where David is to bear him the news. "Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, yet again to Joab, but howsoever, let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushai. And Joab said, wherefore wilt thou run, my son, seeing thou hast no tidings ready? You're not prepared to give the full news. You do not know really what the full report should be. You don't have a preparation made to give the right kind of tidings. And so what's the use of you running? What's going to be the advantage of it? But howsoever, said he, let me run. And he said unto him, run. So finally Joab, I guess, grew tired of Ahimaaz begging him to let him go, so he finally says, go, run. And he probably thought that Cushai would get there first anyway, since Cushai now had a head start. But we find that Ahimaaz was a very fast runner. Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and overran Cushai. So he caught up with and passed Cushai in the race to the city to tell David the news. And David sat between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate under the wall and lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man running along. Here was a man running. And he only sees one man, a man running alone. And the watchman cried and told the king. And the king said, "If he be alone, there is tidings in his mouth." And he came apace and drew near. So the king said, "Well, if it's just one man, that means it's somebody bringing us a message. It doesn't mean that the army is retreating. It doesn't mean that there's been a rout of our forces. It doesn't mean that we've been defeated. But just one man, he certainly is not a retreating army. He's come to bring tidings. We're going to get some kind of a message." So he came apace and drew near. He drew near to the watchman. He was ready to get all the information he could about this runner. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter and said, "Behold, another man runneth alone." And the king said, "He also bringeth tidings." So David still knew that if there were two men running, each one running alone, that they'd both be bringing some kind of tidings. And the watchman said, "Methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok." And the king said, "He's a good man and cometh with good tidings." He knew that Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, was one of the men who'd been appointed to bring him messages. He'd been appointed to bring him news. And he'd only received good news from Ahimaaz. And so he felt like that here's a good man and he come with good tidings. We're going to get some good news from this man. And Ahimaaz must have been fairly well known for his running, because the watchman identified him by the way that he ran. He no doubt was a very swift person, and he apparently was a well-trained runner. Now let's remember that this man also was a son of the priest. He was one that was dedicated to the things of God, in that he was doing the spiritual work of the nation. But this doesn't mean that he didn't keep his body in good physical condition. This had no hindrance upon the fact that he was a superior runner. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the king, "All is well." And he fell down to the earth upon his face before the king and said, "Blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king." So he gives good tidings to David. He said, "All is well. Everything is fine. Let's give praise to God. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against the Lord my king." The very first thing that he indicates is that God is to be thanked. Let's give God the credit, give God the glory, give God the honor for this victory that we have obtained. Now, you know, it's one thing to pray real desperately to God to give us the victory, but it's another thing, after we've received the victory, then to go back and give God the thanks for it, to show God our appreciation, to show God that we do understand, that we do believe, and we do have our lives so conformed to the fact that God is responsible for our victory. And that's what Ahimaaz suggests at this time when he gives the message to David. Now, let's remember that Ahimaaz didn't have the full message. This is why Joab didn't want him to go. Ahimaaz is going to give an imperfect, incomplete message to David. And, of course, we know what primarily is on David's mind. He's concerned about the welfare of Absalom, his rebellious, traitorous son, his murderous son. David has an unnatural affection, it seems, for him, that at his very worst, David still is more concerned about him than anything else. So his question is, and the king said, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" And Ahimaaz answered, "When Joab sent the king's servant, and me thy servant, I saw a great tumult, but I knew not what it was." Now Ahimaaz probably had a good idea what it was, because Joab told him that Absalom was dead, but he wasn't really prepared to give the news. He didn't know from first hand. And so he kind of bows out. He kind of loses his courage in telling the king about this. So he says, "I saw a great tumult, but I know not what it was." And the king said unto him, "Turn aside and stand here." And he turned aside and stood still. And behold, Cushai came. Now Cushai was the slower runner of the two. He'd been overrun by Ahimaaz, but he's coming. And he finally arrives. And Cushai said, "Tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. Well, David already knew this. This wasn't news to David at this point. But what David didn't know was the outcome regarding Absalom. So, verse 32, and the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered. And notice the very cleverness and the tactfulness of this answer. Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is. So now David knew. Absalom also had been put to death. He had died in the battle. Because he's going to be like the other enemies of the king were, and he knew that they had been defeated. And so this was a way of telling David that his son had been killed. Absalom, his oldest son, the one next in line for the crown, the one that David had had so much mental anguish and torment about up to this point because of Absalom's rebellion and Absalom's disobedience and his absolute wickedness. Yet David had this very great feeling for Absalom. Oh, that a son could be so wicked, and oh, that a father could be so loving. It seemed that David wanted to overlook all of his faults. David thought more of him than he did apparently any of the armies that were fighting. He was more concerned about the outcome of Absalom, it seems, than anyone else at this point. He was blinded by his fatherly love for this son. And so verse 33 says, and the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. So he climbs up to this room over the gate where he can be in some solitude there by himself, not a spectacle to everyone standing around. He wept, and as he went, thus he said, while he was going up to this room to weep and to mourn and to grieve, he was heard to say, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. He is so overcome with grief and emotion at this time that he even prays that he had been the one to die in the place of Absalom. Let me die for you. Let me die and then let you have my place as king. Anything in David's mind at this point would have been better than Absalom's death. But as we know, Absalom was a man who was so wicked, who was so ungodly, who was so unfaithful to his own father, that he deserved what he got. He had long been agging for this kind of punishment. He had been guilty of death himself. He had flouted the law, and he had been working a long time on the overthrow of the government, on the sedition, on planting distrust in the minds of the people about David. And so he got what God wanted him to have. He got what he deserved to have. But yet David is not prepared to accept this. David, being his loving father, is overcome with grief at the time here that he learns about Absalom's death. We notice here a difference in David's attitude also in the death of this son Absalom and in the death of the little infant that had been born to Bathsheba. When that little son died, then David accepted that death. He said, he'll not return to me, but I shall go unto him. But in this particular case with Absalom, he knows that Absalom has died a wicked man, and that if David's going to be saved, that he'll not go to the same place that Absalom's going to. He'll never again be with Absalom, even after this life. And so knowing that he's lost a son who's living in a wicked state adds to the grief of the occasion. So now we move into chapter 19.